Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Okay, sorry, it's that time of the night again. We're joined by some special guests, interesting people. And as you may know, I have a huge interest in American politics and the inner workings of the political system in America. But my guests tonight are experts also, by the way, in just that. When I say experts, they like to talk about it. And we have a double header tonight, Chris Cruz and Adam Coleman. Adam, who we spoke to before, by the way, on the show many times. Chris is a media producer in Blaze Media, where he contributes to various radio and television programs and also co-hosts, should I say, the Chris Cruz program, a weekly podcast that looks at entertainment and politics. Adam, on the other hand, is an author of Black Victim to Black Victor. We spoke about the book some time ago with Adam, and an op-ed writer, public speaker, host of Breaking Bread video series, and the founder of Wrong Speak Publishing. Thank you very much indeed, gentlemen, for joining me tonight. I do appreciate both of you being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so welcome. Now, the only problem we're going to have, by the way, guys, is because you guys are in America, we get a very slight delay. But we'll work on it when we get there. The first thing I want to talk about, and I go to you, Chris, first in relation to this. Micheál Martin, of course, the Irish Taoiseach, or Prime Minister, as you would know him as, joined Donald Trump on the 12th of March, not the 17th, which would be quite traditional. Nobody knows why that happened, maybe because he had already arranged to meet Conor McGregor. But anyway, how do you think that kind of meeting went? Because Micheál didn't have a huge amount to say, really, did he?
So it's funny to talk about the Conor McGregor, because it was very interesting. We actually talked about that. The only time, and this is in a jokey way, seems like the only time we invite Irish people is during St. Paddy's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, you know, but I'm going to turn it back. It's like, is Conor McGregor not liked over there? Because when he was over here, I know he has some cases, right? And I know there's some issues with him. But every time, so when he did that speech, especially with our Secretary of Defense, and then when he was at the White House, he, you know, talked about the Irish people and what he believes in the freedom that the Irish people deserve. It kind of shocked me, because from what he said, I didn't know that the freedom that he was talking about was being missed. So,
what I will say to you, Chris, in relation to Conor McGregor, he's kind of like Marmite in Ireland. You know what I mean? People either love him or they despise him. There doesn't seem to be any middle ground. A lot of people maybe thought the message that he gave created a good debate here over the last 10 days. And certainly he's embarrassed the Irish government, because we do have a housing crisis. We do have a problem with immigration chaos. So we do have all of those problems. And we need to get control of them, and the government don't seem to be doing a good job of that. So his message wasn't too bad, but unfortunately it was Conor McGregor, and a lot of people, you know, who don't like him maybe didn't see that message. But in relation to Micheál Martin, a lot of people say, well, he wasn't active enough when he met Donald Trump on the 12th. But that's neither here nor there. And I mentioned immigration, and I'm going to come to you on this one, Adam. Tom Holman claims that, you know, the illegal border crossings have plummeted. You know, he obviously talks about they're down by 96%. Now, I don't know how true that figure is, assuming the figures are accurate. Why did it take so long for someone to implement action, you know, to contribute to this kind of sharp decline, when the previous administration couldn't do that in 4 years?
Well, because I've come to the conclusion that it was intentional. They purposefully did not want to make any sort of headway with it. They wanted it to be the way that it actually was, with just indiscriminate amounts of people coming through. We had people from China coming through who found out the best way to come through our southern border over TikTok. I mean, when 60 Minutes can stand by the border and just watch people flow through minute after minute, you know there's a problem. And when they would gaslight the American public saying that there isn't one, just until, you know, election season comes around, they intentionally wanted it. He made an app, so people can basically apply to enter the country, and then get mixed up, and who knows if they actually make it to their asylum case.
Yeah, so this is the app, by the way, that you can now, on this app you can download, you can self-deport. And according to Donald Trump and the administration, if you use the app, self-deport, you have an opportunity then to apply legitimately, to come back to America. But if you don't, they will forcibly deport you, and you will never be allowed back into the United States again. That's kind of the situation with the app, isn't it?
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, I think that's probably not the best way to go about it, but it might be the most pragmatic way to go about it, to help people help you out by leaving the country. Mm. And if you're a legitimate asylum seeker who got mixed up in the massive wave of people who aren't legitimate asylum seekers, then maybe this is the best opportunity for you to find some actual sort of asylum in America.
I mean, Chris, I mean, you'd be familiar with this app, of course, the CBP app. Do you think it's going to be one of the most popular apps on the App Store, or is it racist, insensitive towards illegal immigrants, according to some people on the left or the Democrats?
And that's the thing, that we seem to forget that the people, doesn't matter that they were coming for a better way of living. You started with the wrong foot. I believe that America is a good place to restart your life, but when you're already starting in the negative and already crossing illegally, you don't start right at all. So I believe that this administration is giving them a very nice deal where, hey, you broke the law by coming here illegally. How about you man up or woman up, self-deport, and we'll give you a chance to come back? I feel like that is fair, but the people that are calling it racist, they're using that as a scare tactic to scare. I don't know if you remember back in Obama years where we're trying to bring the people out of hiding, right? That was the whole administration. There's people hiding. There are people trying to, they're scared. They don't want to get deported. Well, when the left and the Democrats, when they go out and said, oh, you know, they're going to deport you, this is a racist app, that's what they're doing. They're scaring the lower informed person here. And then once you, and that's, for me, it's dog whistles, right? Hmm. So when immediately the left calls it racist, they're like Trump. So like, oh, it must be bad. Well, I don't think it's racist. As a Latino myself, I don't think it's racist. I think you should have just come here legally from the get-go, and you don't have no problem by hiding, you know, being staying in the shadows.
But America, but I'd say this to both of you. America has thrived on illegal immigrants to some degree. I mean, you go to Florida, for example. Who cuts the grass, you know, in public land? Who fixes the roofs on houses and reslates them during a hurricane? You know, who does all the menial jobs that most Americans will refuse to do? It's generally Mexicans and illegal immigrants.
Oh, well, I guess my only...
Sorry, Adam. Go ahead, Adam.
No, I'm sorry about that. I was going to say my only pushback is this. I think the Americans don't want to do it has been the propaganda that has been spreading throughout our country and in other countries, believing that Americans don't want to do it. I actually recently talked to a landscaper who's out in Mississippi, and he said multiple times, he's like, we have people who live in some of the poorest areas who are dying to have a job. All right. And that's just in Mississippi. There are places all over the country. What has happened is we were forced to take on illegal immigration. You know, I got warehouses near my house filled with illegal immigrants, right? And they do not hire Americans. Like, everybody just knows this. So it's not that they don't want to do it. It's that the entire economy for certain sectors has isolated legal work, right? Because it's too expensive to hire people legitimately in comparison to saving and maybe making a bunch of money off of low-skilled labor that is either under the table or at lower, much lower costs, and avoiding paying taxes, employment taxes. So, you know, I think we're going to see very soon, if this keeps up, that there are plenty of Americans who are looking for work, and they're being overrun by illegal immigration.
I mean, you've also seen, too, in relation to DOGE, and I'll come to you, Chris, in relation to this one, Judge Tanya Chutkan. It's been called lawfare, of course, by the Trump administration, and she's only a district court judge, by the way, that she is obviously taking a case against the American president because she believes she's more powerful in relation to DOGE and this kind of cutting of jobs across, you know, the public sector and the wastage of money. So she, and also, by the way, she's got involved in the illegal immigration argument as well. You know, she goes going against the whole kind of drain the swamp, I suppose, argument that Trump has. Do you think she'll be successful?
Now it is what I called the judicial branch here in America has completely overstepped their lane, which is why the founding fathers made the judicial branch the weakest branch. So I don't think she's going to be successful, because of the way that the founding fathers made the Constitution, divided the branches, divided the government into three branches, the executive. The problem is right now that we have so many activist judges that are leading with their hearts. There's nothing wrong with leading with your heart. But when your job is to interpret the law, the Constitution, that's when I have a problem. I love that America is the beacon of freedom, but let's do it right. And right now, what's going to happen is it's not going to end in their favors, because at the end of the day, nobody's breaking the law from what I see in this administration. It's just being interpreted via activist judges.
And that goes for immigration as well. Of course, they're using the Illegal Alien Act from many, many years ago, about 100 years ago under the Constitution.
Yes.
So, and they believe they were in their rights to, you know, deport people. But obviously, again, you've got a judge, as they say, lawfare, are going against Donald Trump, thinking they're more important than the president and demanding that he stop doing this immediately.
Well, yeah, and it's one of those that, at the end of the day, who is in charge of the executive branch? It is the president of the United States. So why is the judge stepping out of their lane? So it's going to end badly.
Well, they are Democrat judges. We all know that they're Democrat judges that don't like Trump.
Yes, and that's another one, too. It's like, I don't know if you were able to cover this, but while Trump was doing his speech in Congress, it wasn't a State of the Union, but Trump said it at the beginning. He said, it won't matter what I do, the Democrats will hate it. Donald Trump could cure cancer tomorrow, and the Democrats somehow will find it. Well, what about those oncologists? They're not going to have a job anymore. So at this point, we're in a period where it doesn't matter what Donald Trump does, they're going to hate. So what does he have to do? He has to keep pushing forward and make sure that the people know that voted for him, that he's trying his best within the boundaries that the Constitution gives him, and then let the judges fight it out, and then have his judges, the White House judges, fight it out in court, or the Department of Justice defend themselves. But at this point, I think he's doing exactly what he promised, and that's the biggest problem. The obstacle, it was not the Democrats. It's really enough the judges. And who would have thunk it? I think they were ready for this. Since Biden was president and they saw that Trump was going to win, they were already ready for that. And Biden signed in or appointed so many judges that they were ready for that. And that's one thing I don't think the Republicans were ready for. I don't think they were ready for activist judges.
But here's the thing, and I say this to you, Adam. He's doing nothing he never said he was going to do. So, you know, half of America voted for him based on what he said he was going to do, and that's exactly what he's doing. And in relation to that, I suppose the tariffs is a big thing. Because he's a businessman, obviously he believes tariffs are a good idea. Many other American presidents thought they were a bad idea. Reagan thought they were a good idea to some extent. But, you know, I'm looking at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette here, and it says Trump's tariffs are saving the American steel industry. Now, of course, he has threatened Europe with massive tariffs if they don't remove the tariffs off whiskey or American alcohol. He's threatened to put a 100% tariff on European goods coming into America, or European alcohol coming into America. Do you think the tariffs are going to make a difference to the cost of living in America? And is the cost of living going down? They're already, well, I suppose they're using eggs as an example. I don't know whether the price of eggs have come down. But as the price of gas come down, as the price of goods in the shops come down, are they seeing any results at all yet?
I think it might be too soon to say like if any prices that are going down, if it's a result of the tariffs. But do I think in general that how he's posturing with tariffs is a good thing? I've been convinced that yes, it is a good thing. And it's a good thing in the sense that it brings everyone back to the table, because it shocks them. They get really angry and then they come to the table. Then he has a conversation with them and they leave with a deal. I mean, that's been the pattern.
Using it as a threat, essentially. Yeah,
right. Exactly. Right. And he's talked about that. He calls it the big ask. The big ask. He wants 50%. Really, he wanted 25%. Right. And so he's been doing that left and right. And I think what people are just shocked is that there is a politician that actually has some balls, that actually wants to do something and actually values the American economy. Because what we've been seeing is people who have been willing to sell off the American economy, sell off what is valuable about us, so that they can get something in return, or not even try to do something to get the American public something in return. So it doesn't make any sense why Germany won't buy our cars, but we'll buy all of Germany's cars, right? Why are they having 100+% tariffs on importing vehicles from us? But we don't have any on them. Like, how does this make sense? And so I understand where he's coming from. He wants a fair trade situation. And right now we're seeing in many industries, it is not fair. So a lot of people are going to be upset, but they're going to be upset in the short term, because at the end of the day, the United States holds all the leverage.
How is he going to get on today? Of course, one of the executive orders he signed, I think it was today actually, was to get rid of the Department of Education. Because basically he says, we plainly failed our children, teachers and families. And he talks about ideologies in the school as well and the wastage in the schools. Do you think this is going to be a good idea? Can he actually reform the education system? Because let's be clear about it. America spend the most amount in the world on education, but have the poorest results.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because that's one thing that people are not understanding. It goes back to what abortion was, right? Trump said, hey, abortion goes back to the state. That's basically what he's doing with this, the Department of Education. There's no way that Texas, which where I'm at, Texas students have to learn with whatever New York students have to learn or California students have to learn. That makes no sense. So how about instead of us sending the money to the government and the money coming back to us, how about we just leave it at the local level? For example, here in Dallas, Texas, guess what? The federal Department of Education closed today. Today was the last day, and I think it was about 3,000 people were still working there, and today was their last day right after he signed that executive order. I think that is fantastic, because it goes back to what our founding fathers wanted: small government, people's government. And that's one thing that I believe that Trump can do by, like you said earlier, draining the swamp. How do you drain the swamp? You remove all the bureaucrats. You remove all the non-elected officials that we have now. And you say, you know what? No, Texas, you handle your education, because obviously as a national program, how the Department of Education was, that's not working. So how about each state does its own thing and they localize it to the students that you have? I never understood the Department of Education, especially for someone like me, where I homeschool. We teach our kids ourselves. And in the state of Texas...
Why do you do that, Chris? I'm just curious. Why do you homeschool your kids? So I'm curious now.
One is because I saw what the curriculums were, and it was something that did not align to myself. I'm a Christian, and I felt that if I'm in control of what my kid is learning, I have a better way to teach him the proper way. Now, I have no problem with teachers, but I just did not want the exposure that, for example, the pride flag. I just did not want that, where I have to force the conversation instead of, hey, you know, there's people that believe differently. That's what that. But when I send them to public school, they're forcing me to have that conversation about pride, about sex education. I don't think that my 14-year-old should be learning about what a sex toy is. Mm-hmm. But that was what they were teaching here. I don't want that. Well, if my son has a question about that, then guess what? What a better way to go to your father instead of some random teacher. Again, not that I hate the teachers. I just want my kid's education to be controlled by me, not someone that's not even in the state.
There's one executive order after the next. I mean, you remember the first 7 days, of course, of his presidency. It was just like he was permanently sitting at the Oval Desk signing executive orders. And nothing that he didn't promise he was going to do, by the way. But here's the thing. You know, he's a 78-year-old man. Don't get me wrong. He's clearly demonstrated huge energy and what can only be described as an exhausting campaign this past year in particular. He's been shot at. He's been brought to court many times. His work ethic is clearly unquestionable. But do you think he can keep up that pace for 4 years and keep up the promises?
You know, I call him Trump 2.0. I think Trump 2.0 is different. And especially I saw a change in his demeanor. I actually got to see him speak at the Moms for Liberty conference. And he seemed like, you know, the typical Trump. But after the assassination attempt, he seemed different. And coincidentally, you know, he spoke at the RNC and his demeanor was different. He was calmer. And actually, he seemed like he was on a mission. Right. And that's the type of Trump that we're seeing. One, he seems to be founding someone more of faith. He's talking about God and him having a purpose. That's why he's here and, you know, still living. So Trump 2.0 is incredibly driven. He feels like he has a purpose. By his words that he has a purpose, thanks to God for keeping him here. So that's that's why we're seeing him go at such a rapid pace. And I think Trump 1.0 would have signed a bunch of executive orders and then tried to go on 60 Minutes or some mainstream network to rationalize what he's doing. And then they chop it up and make him look worse. And it would just been a whole mess. He's not doing that. He's doing what he has to do. He's doing less interviews because he doesn't need to, but he's also being incredibly transparent. So I actually like this Trump versus the old Trump.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and the relationship, sorry, Chris, just because I'm coming close to the end here, the relationship with Elon Musk, obviously kind of Elon Musk bought his way in there to some degree by paying for a lot of the campaign or putting a lot of money towards the campaign, and is now kind of Donald's new best friend. He's like the brother he never had. Do you see that relationship falling apart at some point? Because it probably will, won't it?
And that's the thing. I think we're judging Trump how we judge, like we're judging Trump how we're judging Trump from 2016. I think the Trump that we're seeing now on this 47, right? He's a 47th president. I don't think that relationship is going to fall, because you remember he was very easily offended in 2016. He was very, someone spoke wrong about him, he will give him a nickname and will trash them and will destroy basically the future career, which is what happened with Ted Cruz, the senator here out of Texas. But I don't think that Trump from 2016 is here because he sees the importance. And I have to agree, this is a different Trump. This is a Trump that no one knows, and he does not care. It's basically the guy who, well, he's older than this. It's like when here, when you turn 50, you don't care what you tell people because you're old enough and you're setting your ways. I think that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing a Trump that he said, I have a mission, and my mission to bring back America, bring the golden age back. I don't care who is in front of me. I have my close allies. I know who my friends are. He has a thicker skin now because he didn't in 2016, which is one of the reasons I kind of was upset with him, but he would just get so offended very easily. But I think this Trump 47 has a thicker skin. He's on mission. And I do believe that right after that assassination attempt that took, you know, some of his ear off, that was the turning point that he said, wait, one, God is real. And two, I'm here on a mission. If they're trying to kill me, that means.
But they're still trying to stop him. They're still trying to stop him. You've got these judges who've kind of assumed the power of presidency without having to attain the, obviously, 80 million votes to get there. They want all of the advantages with none of the risks. So, I mean, they're still after him. They're still trying to stop him.
Yeah, and they're going to. And he knows that. But the difference is that this is not stopping him whatsoever. He's going to keep powering through. There's going to be some losses that are going to come through. He might lose some of them, but you know what? He's not stopping. And that's the main difference between this version of Trump, is that he's not being hindered, right? And he's just bombarding them with new changes, massive changes done to the federal government. And he's actually doing the thing that every president says they're going to do, shrink the government until someone, you know, some lobbyist group says, well, not us. And then the next lobbyist group says, not us. And then ultimately, they never shrink the government. It just gets even bigger. So he's doing the hard stuff now, but I think we'll see the return in the near future.
Well, right, well, listen, unfortunately, I've run out of time. Chris Cruz from Blaze Media, and also thank you very much indeed, Adam B. Coleman, from the author of Black Victim to Black Victor. I do appreciate it. I'm sure we'll talk to you again, gentlemen. Thank you very much indeed for joining me this evening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
There you go. If you're a Trump fan, I'm sure you might have enjoyed that. If you weren't a Trump fan, well, you probably didn't. And that's just the way it is. We'll have somebody on the other night to give out about Trump. Look, there's no arguing that he's a hard worker. Whether you agree with the changes he's making in America is a whole different kettle of fish. I don't know whether the left have calmed down yet. Although I do believe I have seen there today an article that the Late Late Show are featuring Rosie O'Donnell as a guest on Friday night. I mean, for God's sake, did you hear the funny quip that Donald Trump made when Micheál Martin was visiting? A journalist actually asked Micheál Martin, what do you think of Rosie O'Donnell? Because Rosie O'Donnell had moved to Ireland because she said she would if Trump was elected. And by the way, in case you don't know who Rosie O'Donnell, she's kind of has been comedian from God knows when. Anyway, Trump turned around and says, do you know Rosie O'Donnell? He said to Micheál Martin. And Micheál Martin kind of looked like, no idea who she is kind of thing. And Trump says, good, you don't want to know her. Or something along those lines. He just doesn't care what he says. He doesn't care. And you know what? I would love to have politicians in this country, you know, or a president with power, or a Taoiseach, who actually had the balls not to be led by other people, but to be led by themselves and not care what people think of the decisions they make, as long as they're the right decisions for the people of the country. And whether you hate Trump or like Trump, all he's doing is making sure he implements the promises he made during an election. So the majority of people voted for him. That's democracy. And he told them before he was elected, this is what I'm going to do about immigration, about education, about DOGE, about all of those things. He told them about all of those things before he did them. And they voted for him. So if they didn't want those things, they wouldn't have voted for him. We got to respect democracy. But unfortunately, there are people in this world who don't respect democracy.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.